From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. For months now, we've seen the primary election votes pouring in across the country for Donald J. Trump. The Republican establishment in a panic about how to stop him, or at least slow him down. Some big players say they'd rather have a contested convention than Donald Trump. A fight on the floor in July in Cleveland. The last time Republicans had a contested convention beyond the first ballot was 1948. Could it happen again in 2016? This hour on Point, the contested convention scenario, what that would look like. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. If Trump doesn't come in with the formal number of delegates needed to own it, is it anything goes? Should it be? Trump backers, are you afraid you'll be robbed at the convention? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Now, as people have watched these numbers come in, and again this week, big Trump victories, three states, and yet all kinds of opposition to him right here at On Point. We talked with Mitt Romney on Monday. Here's what he had to say.
I happen to think that Donald Trump would be a very bad thing for the party and for the country. So I'd rather have a contested convention than Donald Trump.
Okay, Mitt Romney, he didn't win last time. Who cares, maybe? But people right in the game, very similar message. Last Friday, Ohio Governor John Kasich talked with CBS News' Major Garrett, who asked him if he had a chance to win beyond Ohio.
Frankly, if I win Ohio, we're probably going to end up in a convention, a brokered convention. And then we're going to find out who the adult is.
And then we're going to find out who the adult is at a brokered convention. Sean Trendy joins you right now. He's senior elections analyst for Real Clear Politics. He's in Miami, Florida, where there will be a very big and consequential vote next week. Sean, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Can you just remind us, let's start in the GOP, where the delegate count stands. 1,237 is the magic number needed to clinch the nomination. That's a majority of the total. Where do things stand today, Sean?
Well, the truth of the matter is no one's really close to that threshold. Donald Trump is the closest. He has 458 delegates, which is about 37% of what he needs. Ted Cruz has 359, which is 29% of what he needs. And then Marco Rubio, John Kasich, and Ben Carson are lagging pretty badly.
So you get way down in the small numbers really quickly. At 458, does Donald Trump look in easy shot of getting that 1237 magic number before the July convention in Cleveland, Ohio, or is that an open question?
It's very much an open question. I would say 50-50. There's a lot of races to be held. This field is going to narrow further. We do see some pretty decent evidence of a Trump ceiling. So as this field winnows, it becomes a different game.
Could this all change next week? A lot of this rides, as John Kasich was just saying there, on him winning his home state of Ohio. Marco Rubio going all out last ditch to win his home state of Florida. If Trump wins one or both of those, would it move him toward clinching the full delegate number he needs?
Well, winning both of them certainly would. If he wins both of them, I think he'd put his odds up at maybe more around 70%. Although Rubio and Kasich would both drop, and that would put Trump in a one-on-one with Ted Cruz, and he loses a lot of those matchups. The real question is what happens if Marco Rubio wins, or more likely John Kasich wins, and I think then you have to say the odds are very good that we end up with a contested convention.
So that is explicitly the Kasich plan here. We've got Mitt Romney and others saying that they would like to see that happen. I mean, what's the chatter at this point? Do people have that you're hearing? Do people have the nerve to do that, to go in and fight it out for delegates that where the final winner might not be the same one who got the most delegates, but would somehow get brokered to a victory at the convention?
Yeah, the winner might be someone who hasn't gotten any delegates. I mean, you could have someone like Paul. I mean, I think Paul Ryan would actually have a pretty decent shot of emerging as the nominee in that scenario. But I think they absolutely have the nerve to do it. I mean, Donald Trump, I think the last poll had 70% unfavorability ratings for him, which is historic. You know, he would probably bring down the Senate with him and might even put the House in place. So Republicans will do whatever it takes to avoid that.
Can we touch on the Democrats for just a moment here? Maybe a different scenario, but we talked with the chief strategist for Bernie Sanders yesterday, Ted Devine, who said that their kind of number one hope right now is that they get superdelegates, of whom Hillary Clinton has many more than Bernie at this point, to switch over to Sanders, that they persuade them that he's got a better chance in the fall. What does that look like? Could they be battling for superdelegates in a way that's a kind of brokering right down to the convention time or even on the convention floor?
Yeah, so there's only two candidates who are going to have delegates. So it almost certainly get decided on the first ballot. But yes, that's Sanders' hope. He's down pretty badly, but not horribly, in pledged delegates. So he would hope to convince some superdelegates who have pledged for Clinton to come over to his side. Clinton would probably need to lose some more big states like Ohio, maybe lose Florida or something like that before that becomes a potential play for him.
But that means there could be a kind of battle, maybe not on the convention floor, but a kind of away from the ballot box battle, even in the Democratic Party.
Yes, and because the Democrats allocate all of their delegates proportionally, none of them are winner-take-all like the late Republican primaries tend to be, it's very difficult for Clinton to open up a very large lead. So, if her high favorables persist and she loses some states like Wisconsin, Ohio, maybe Florida, Sanders will have a case to make.
We could see a lot of fisticuffs on the way to the convention floor, maybe on the convention floor. Sean Trendy with Real Clear Politics, senior elections analyst there from Miami today. Thanks very much for joining us, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
I mean, it doesn't look great to have one guy coming in with the most delegates and somebody else coming out the other end of convention with the victory. And so you have to listen very carefully to what people are saying about this. Here was Ted Cruz talking on a Sunday with John Dickerson on CBS's Face the Nation. And Dickerson asked him how he felt about the possibility of a contested convention.
The Washington establishment is in a panic. They're confused. They don't understand what's happening. And their favorite candidates, the ones that they want to win, are not getting the votes. But if a bunch of Washington dealmakers try to step in a brokered convention and steal the nomination, I think we will have a manifest uprising.
We'll have an uprising, says Ted Cruz, but you have to listen carefully, and you have to listen over time. Here was the same candidate, Ted Cruz, telling Megyn Kelly's of Fox on Wednesday that he's okay with a contested convention.
Look, Reagan and Ford battled it out at a contested convention. That's what conventions are for. If you're fighting between the candidates who have earned the votes of the people, and it's the delegates at the convention who've been elected to do that, that's the way the system works.
That's the way the system works. Remember that phrase? You may be hearing a lot more of that, possibly in Cleveland this summer. With us right now from Miami, of course, all the action is moving to Florida among those who follow these campaigns. McKay Coppins is with us, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, author of The Wilderness, Deep Inside the Republican Party's Combative, Contentious, Chaotic Quest to Take Back the White House. McKay, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
It sounded kind of ludicrous for a while. It seems like something out of the mists or the cigar smoke of time. And yet people have been talking about it. We've got Romney and Cruz and Kasich all there in a row talking about it, and apparently more mucky-mucks, behind the scenes thinking about engineering this. Could we still, at this point, with the delegate counts and the road ahead, end up in a contested convention for the GOP in Cleveland?
We absolutely could. In fact, it's looking more and more likely every day. As Sean Trendy said earlier, unless Trump can win both Ohio and Florida on Tuesday, it's incredibly unlikely that he gets enough delegates to clinch the nomination. That magic number is 1,237.
Yep.
If he can't get to that number of delegates, or very close to it. I think, if Trump is a couple dozen delegates shy, it's unlikely that a true contested convention would play out. But unless he can get there, it's very likely that there will be a contested convention. And I think that it's important to note that, Ted Cruz's kind of backtrack on the issue of a contested convention hinges on the difference, a minor rhetorical difference, which is the difference between a brokered convention and a contested convention.
Enlighten us. Make the distinction.
Well, these are all, these aren't official terms, right?
No, but I see where you're going. Lay that out.
Essentially, what Cruz is arguing against is that there should not be a brokered convention where we get to we get to Cleveland, there isn't a nominee, and a bunch of kind of party eminences and wealthy donor types get in a back room, huddle, hash it out, and decide who they want to be the nominee. That would be what brokering is. A contested convention would be, you get to the convention, you have two candidates in Cruz's vision, this is his ideal situation, is you get to the convention, you have two candidates with the highest number of delegates, and they battle it out. And it's more of a free-for-all, it's more of a, you know, see who can which candidate can persuade the party to line up behind them. That's obviously preferable to a candidate like Ted Cruz, who has very few friends in the GOP establishment. It's also, frankly, more realistic. The whole idea of a brokered convention is not very likely, only because the Republican Party, as this election cycle has shown, has very few brokers left that have any kind of real influence. There aren't people in these smoke-filled back rooms anymore that are operating the levers of the party. There are people who used to do that, and there are certainly people who thought that they had that ability. But Donald Trump has shown that he doesn't need them to be able to get to where he is. And so it's unlikely that if we got to a contested convention, that it would be engineered by a handful of influential people.
Of course, the fact that they aren't there doesn't mean that there are some people who wouldn't like to fill that role. We were joking here this morning about whether they can have smoke-filled rooms anymore if enough people still chomp on cigars. Or, I mean, even John Boehner isn't around with his cigarettes these days. Maybe vape-filled. Maybe they're vaping in the back room. But I still wonder if Ted Cruz, if it's a distinction without a difference at some level, brokered versus contested. I mean, we're reading about how his people are out there getting the state delegates lined up who would be sympathetic to them if the first ballot at the convention doesn't go Trump's way. Like, they're trying to infiltrate the ranks of those delegates already with people who would flip straight to them. That's a kind of engineering anyway.
They're trying to do it. Other campaigns are trying to do it. I know for a fact that people in Rubio's orbit have also been approaching delegates and people who have sway with the delegates to talk to them about this. As you mentioned, the way that this would work is that after the first ballot, if nobody has enough delegates, you'd go to the second ballot, and at that point, about 60% of the delegates become unbound, which means that they no longer have to vote for the candidate who won their state or precinct or whatever. And then after the second ballot, if you still don't have a nominee, it would go to the third ballot, and then over 80% become unbound.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. And we're talking this hour about the contested convention scenario for the GOP, asking a little bit if there's also something like that out there as a potential for the Democrats, but really gaming out the more likely what it would look like if the fight for delegates to win the nomination goes right on to the convention floor and back rooms this summer, most likely 50-50, we just heard from Sean Trendy with Real Clear Politics, in the GOP. You can join us this hour. What do you think? Do you see a convention battle and smoke-filled, vape-filled rooms coming as mainline Republicans try to stop Donald Trump? Trump. And are there smoke-filled rooms anymore without John Boehner? Trump supporters, are you worried you might feel robbed at the GOP convention? Trump opponents, are you girding to make a last stand on the convention floor in Cleveland, whatever it takes? McKay Coppins is with us, author of The Wilderness, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, head of the Republican National Committee, the chair there, Reince Priebus, in Maryland a week ago, saying, no, this is not going to happen. Fox News host Sean Hannity asked him about a contested convention. Was it likely?
I would just say what I've always said. I think the odds of a contested convention are very small.
You do.
And, of course, I've been saying that for a long time.
Most people won't say they want it, but what if it came down to Trump? Here was Marco Rubio. This was late last month. Asked if he was thinking about a contested convention as a way to secure the GOP nomination.
I would not prefer that to be the case. I would much rather just have someone win the nomination in this process, but not a con artist like Donald Trump.
Okay, but not Donald Trump. And if it's him, is that time to do it? There's so much tension out there. Here was Lindsey Graham, senator, one-time contender himself, or would be, talking with Charlie Rose on CBS last week. Said choosing between Trump and Cruz, if it comes down to that, is like choosing, he said, between being shot or poisoned. In this interview, he said the GOP needs to come together, he said, behind Cruz.
We may be in a position where we have to rally around Ted Cruz is the only way to stop Donald Trump.
So you would,
and I'm not so sure that would work.
But you'd recommend that in order to stop Donald Trump, rally behind Ted Cruz.
I can't believe I would say yes, but yes.
But does that end up being rallying behind Ted Cruz on a second ballot in Cleveland or even a third ballot? Trump, of course, taking this on board, On Fox and Friends Tuesday morning, host Brian Kilmeade asked if he thought it would be unfair to have a brokered convention if he was leading in the delegate count but was short of the 1,237 needed to win the nomination on the first ballot. Here's Trump.
Yeah, I sort of do. I think the people that, you know, whoever's leading at the end should sort of get it. I would think so. That's the way democracy works. And I don't know that that's going to happen, but I'll tell you, there'll be a lot of people that will be very upset if that doesn't happen, because we have really fervent, wonderful people, and I think that would be pretty unfair.
People, yeah, they might very well be upset. McKay Coppin, stand by in Miami. A lot of callers on this, and then I want to bring in Stuart Stevens in just a second here. Hannah in Seattle, Washington. Hannah, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, what are you thinking?
Well, I think it goes to the contestants, whatever. I don't know what it is. I am an immigrant, and I'm just horrified about Donald Trump being a president. That's just not America. He is not America.
Well, so you say, but he's winning elections all over the country. I mean, that's the way it works.
Well, when people are scared and frustrated, things happen. But I think in the right mind, I don't think he's the right choice at all. Some part of me says let him win so the Democrats can win easily. But what if he becomes a president?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole issue. And a lot of Republicans really focused on that. Hannah, I appreciate your call. One more, North Liberty, Iowa. Chris, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I wanted to just make a distinction between Ted Cruz's comments a couple of minutes ago. He talked about a convention that pitted Reagan versus Ford that was contested. That's much different than a convention that maybe gets Ted Cruz and Donald Trump there, but the Republican Party nominates somebody completely differently. That if that happens, that's going to make this entire process from primaries to caucuses across the country inconsequential. And I think that's going to be a larger issue than whether it's Donald Trump or Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio at this point, or John Kasich.
You mean an issue for the Republican Party's credibility if they end up deciding in a contested way that doesn't go with the plurality?
That's right. And, you know, in this case with the Republicans, and then if you want to look at another step in the entire process so far, what you're sending the message to both parties or any parties in the future that say, you know, you can go through all of this process of nominating somebody or getting, you know, two people there, but if you know, a small group of people don't like that answer, then we can nominate somebody completely differently. That's not what this process is supposed to do.
It can sound like a farce. Do you think Trump would stay in or bolt and go third party?
Oh, I don't know that, Tom. That's above my pay grade on what he do. I think it's worth it for him to, if he doesn't get the nomination, you mean, from the Republican Party?
Yeah.
I could see that working. Nothing that Donald Trump has done has been what I thought he would do.
Chris, I appreciate your call. McKay Coppin, stand by in Miami. Stuart Stevens joins us right now from Chicago, political consultant, author. He's got a novel coming out about contested conventions in June this year, The Innocent Have Nothing to Fear. He was chief strategist for Mitt Romney's presidential campaign in 2012, columnist for The Daily Beast. Stuart Stevens, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be with you, man.
Your headline, the latest one I've seen from you, is "It's not too late to stop the GOP apocalypse." What's the apocalypse to you, Stuart?
The apocalypse is a historic defeat, where Donald Trump is a nominee, will lose not only the White House, but the Senate, because of these Senate seats that are up in places where we have vulnerable Republicans that need a strong top of the ticket. And every number we have shows that Donald Trump would be a historically weak and disastrous nominee.
So if you can't stop him at the ballot box in the primaries, are you up, as your former guy Mitt Romney is, for trying to stop him in a contested convention?
Yeah, this is all, I think, kind of misunderstood. They're very simple rules here. You have to get 1,237 delegates to be the nominee. If you've not gotten those delegates, you're not the nominee. And it's like a football game. Someone has to be ahead at the end or it's a tie. If it's not if no one is ahead at the end, we go into overtime. There's nothing nefarious or illegal or suspect about an overtime. You just play the overtime. So in the past, we've had candidates who had the ability to get 1,237 delegates. That's why we didn't have a contested convention. So if Donald Trump can get 1,237 delegates, by winning those votes, then fine, he'll be the nominee. If no one can get 1,237 delegates, you're going to have a contested convention where you're going to sort it out. But that's just how the system has been designed.
McKay, it sounds simple when you put it that way. You know, no biggie, nothing nefarious. It's just going into overtime. You know, but I've got people writing in here. Hello Kitty says, a contested convention will put the final nail in the coffin of the GOP as we know it. Talk about alienating your base.
Well, I mean, look, I think that, again, your earlier caller made a good point. There is a difference between a contested convention that ends up with a nominee who has gotten a bunch of votes, like Ted Cruz, you know, arguably Marco Rubio or John Kasich, you know, the candidates who stay in until the convention and have gotten millions of people voting for him. That's very different than drafting somebody from the floor who hasn't gotten any votes, who hasn't been running. I think Stuart is right that there's nothing illegal about this, and people seem to think that this is like a constitutional issue. It's not. This is the party gets to decide how they do this. That said, it certainly would undermine the idea of a primary and how much the party values the voters if you end up drafting a candidate from the floor who hasn't been running for the past year.
Now, right? What if they're not drafted from off the floor? You know, what if it just ends up going to somebody who didn't win the biggest number of actual voters' votes? They just get the delegate votes in this repeated balloting.
I mean, I think that that's actually I personally don't think that that's unreasonable, right? I mean,
okay.
Like, as much as Donald Trump talks about the silent majority that backs him,
yeah,
he hasn't won a majority in almost any state. I think Massachusetts, he hit 50%. That might be the only state he did. So far, Donald Trump's support base has been a noisy plurality. And if you end up getting to the convention without a majority of the delegates, I don't understand why that candidate should automatically be nominated. I think there's a solid case to make that these things have to be hashed out at the convention because the majority of the party has not gotten behind a candidate yet.
Okay, we're hearing the logic of this. Stuart, yes, please.
Yeah, let me make one point. Barack Obama got fewer votes in the election than Hillary Clinton did, but he got more delegates. He was able to get enough delegates so that by the time they got to the convention, he had secured the nomination.
Including superdelegates who came over to him, something that
yeah.
Bernie Sanders is hoping for.
But on a straight-up number of people who voted, the President of the United States got less than the person he was running against, and we didn't call this a coup d'etat. It was their rules, and that was how it went.
Stuart, you're writing about this in your novel, The Innocent Have Nothing to Fear. How would it work on the floor in Cleveland? If you get past that first ballot, which, yes, there was a tussle with Reagan and Gerald Ford in the 70s, but it never came past the first ballot. It was worked out. But if it does in Cleveland, what happens then? People are running around like you got a whips out there, you know, rustling up votes?
I think the best thing to do is to think about what happens when you play Risk. You always have alliances. And I think that the most logical thing that would happen is that you'd have two candidates who have been running, and they would form a ticket. And those two delegates packages would go together, and that person would win.
So it's Rubio Cruz or Cruz Rubio or something, or Kasich on one of those, and off you go.
It could be Donald Trump and Ted Cruz.
Oh, I see.
It could be Donald Trump and John Kasich.
Okay.
It could be Rubio Cruz.
And boom, you've got the number if they combine their delegates.
The number. I think that the idea of someone coming in from the outside is extremely remote. I don't understand why these guys who've been out there banging their brains out for months, a year now, trying to win, are going to say, hey, look, that's okay, you take it.
Vincent DeVito joins us right now from Boston. He's an attorney and partner at Bowditch & Dewey. He was a delegate on the Rules Committee at the 2012 Republican National Convention. He's supporting Donald Trump. Vincent DeVito, thanks very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm well. Your guy, Trump, says, well, you better not steal this from me, more or less is what he's saying. Do you smell that possibility out there, or is this just the rules and fair is fair, Vincent?
No, I don't think anybody's going to try to steal anything. I mean, I actually believe the nomination has been settled political science for quite some time. You know, a winning begets winning, and Donald Trump will very likely have the enough delegates for the first round in any event, or close to it. And all the bluster right now is just that. I mean, if he's close to it, the convention will go his way on the first round. And I think a good tell will be the spring meeting of the RNC in Hollywood, Florida next month.
Okay.
Because there they will start talking about the rules. They talked about them also during the winter meeting. And you'll get a feel there whether or not there's an appetite for it, which I think at this point, what I'm picking up, that there really is not. You know, conventions are about unifying the party and making sure that after an ugly primary, that we get behind the nominee and win this thing.
We're talking about the possibility of a contested convention in Cleveland this summer. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. But you heard, I don't know if you heard our Sean Trendy with Real Clear Politics saying at this point it looks 50-50 to him whether Donald Trump will have that 1,237 votes in there. I mean, let's say that he's 100 or 200 or 300 votes off. You can hear the noise, people bracing. I mean, Kasich is saying, if he doesn't have it, we're going after it. That's the way it works. Then we'll see who the real adult is, Vince.
Yeah, it's surprising to me to hear all this stuff this late in the primary season when really only one candidate has been winning. I mean, the big plurality is to Donald Trump. There's all sorts of other things that will happen before the convention. The Rules Committee will meet, and these things generally will get settled out well before the convention. So I'm not expecting a contested convention. I'm not expecting anybody but at this point. At this point in history, then Donald Trump be the nominee.
But what about all these your fellow Republicans saying this is the death of the party? This is the apocalypse. Stewart says, you know, you lose the Senate, and he's got this ceiling. You lose lose the White House again. I mean, that's the case they're making.
Yeah, I mean, that's all speculation. There's no sound science behind any of that. People, everybody, you know, there's no establishment, no anti-establishment. The situation is this: we all get behind different candidates, and in the end, whatever candidate wins, we get back together and we go on and try and win the White House.
We'll see.
And this year's not too much different than that. I mean, 4 years ago, with Mitt, it got very ugly. And believe me, the RNC has learned its lesson. We worked hard on the Rules Committee to keep Ron Paul from being nominated from the floor. In retrospect, probably wasn't the best thing to do because these conventions are about unifying everybody and unifying all the guys that ran for the nomination. When we did that to Ron Paul, there was a lot of political blowback, and it ended up being a negative thing for the nominee, ended up being a negative thing for the convention. I mean, by most accounts, Mitt Romney's convention was not a success. And part of that, one of the elements of that, was the fact that we worked hard to keep, for really it was unnecessary, to keep Ron Paul from being nominated. We also, incidentally, in doing that, kept Santorum from being nominated and won some states.
So the rules matter here. Stuart Stevens, you hear Vincent saying, don't do it. Unity comes first. But you're making the case that success at the ballot box or avoiding apocalypse comes first.
But, you know, my feeling about this is Ronald Reagan took a sitting Republican president to the convention in hopes of winning.
Gerald Ford in the 70s, yeah.
In 1976 with Jerry Ford. If it's good enough for Ronald Reagan, I think it passes a smell test for any Republican. It's just, you've got to win to win. You don't get close and then say, let's walk off the field because, hey, the score is close. You play till you win.
What? So are you insisting on 1237? What if it's 1232?
You know, if it was 1232 and I was on the other side, I would try to stop somebody from getting to 1237. I mean, you play by the rules. You got to get to 1237.
McKay, you can hear the teams framing this up on both sides here.
Somewhere near 1230.
Yeah, no, I got it. McKay, overtime comes back here. You hear the frame-up here. Who's more persuasive, McKay?
Well, I mean, I think certainly the Trump – I get the argument Trump is making. I mean, I would be frustrated if I were a Trump supporter and I saw Trump get close to 1237, especially if he's far ahead. At this point, he's only about 100 delegates ahead of Cruz. If he ends up widening that lead as he's expected to, I would be frustrated if I were a Trump supporter or in the Trump campaign if people were using that as a reason to stage a convention floor coup. But I don't think people are talking about that. I think people are talking about, you know, the trying to make sure whoever wins the nomination gets an outright majority of the delegates.
We'll see. I got another break right here, and I apologize, McKee. We'll come right back on that. Stuart Stevens, look for his new novel, The Innocent Have Nothing to Fear, in June. Thank you so much for being with us, Stuart.
Great. Thank you very much.
Stuart Stevens in Chicago and Vincent DeVito at Bowditch & Dewey in Boston. Trump supporter. Vincent, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
This is On Point. We'll be right back.
This On Point podcast is supported by Squarespace, the simplest way to create a beautiful website. Whether your passion is bold, unconventional, or just plain crazy, you should share it with the world in an unforgettable way. Start your free trial today at squarespace.com/onpoint. That's squarespace.com/onpoint. And enter offer code ONPOINT at checkout to get 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the contested convention scenario for the GOP, giving out what it would look like if the fight for delegates to win the nomination goes right on to the convention floor in Cleveland, and back rooms, I guess, this summer. McKay Coppins is with us, senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, author of The Wilderness. Historian Julian Zelizer from Princeton joins us in just a moment to help us look back at how this has worked in the past in American history. You can join us as well. How should we weigh the party rules against the primary will of the people here, or at least a plurality? And say it's contested. Trump gets pushed aside. Who comes in? Cruz? Kasich? Rubio? Paul Ryan? Can the winner who emerges from a contested convention bloodbath, if that's what it turns out to be, go on to win in November? McKay, lots of feedback online here. Dave says, you know, a contested convention could be a good thing. Reminds us how the process actually works, not how we imagine it works. Well, we'll see. Kelly says, seems inevitable we'll have a contested convention when we started with 12 candidates and still have four. Susie says, this whole discussion reveals how the GOP is imploding under the weight of its own bankrupt ideas. She's not for it. Even the leaders like Lindsey Graham don't like the candidates, but of course, Republican voters are pointing somewhere else. And John speaks to that. He says, like it or not, Trump speaks to the real concerns of a lot of people. Helen in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks for calling, Helen. You're on the air.
Yes. I would like to say one thing, and that is we, the people, are having a revolution. We are in a revolution. They're finally calling it that. But we, the people, should not have our will thwarted by big money and by the establishment. To have a broker convention or to have anything that would thwart the will of the people is not good. Social media is upset with the Ben Carson treatment. Last fall, he was up there in the top. Then the moderators and the news media just blacked him out. And the people are furious about that, number one.
Yeah.
So they're not happy about them. They're after Trump. We're all looking at it as after Trump. He's anti-establishment. And we think that they fear, the establishment and money fear so much that he might win, that then Congress is going to have to start looking at term limits. Things are going to change, big change, and we, the people, want the change. We are voicing it.
Hey, Helen, what about my guests who say, hey, wait a minute, the rules are the rules, and it's just like going into overtime in a football game. If he doesn't make the magic number, fair is fair. These are the rules, so it's going to be contested.
Well, we, the people, are mounting a revolution. And sometimes you just have to say, the rules aren't right. If we, the people, want what we want, we should have it.
We got revolution flying in from every angle here. Helen, I appreciate your call. McKay Coppins, it's pitchfork time out there.
Right. No, I mean, look, I think the Republican establishment will not deny that they see the populist crowds gathering and that they are that they respect that. I mean, the thing is, the will of the people, you know, tends to mean 51% or more, right? And so far, Trump doesn't have that.
Yep.
By the way, though, I would point out that just because we get to a contested convention does not mean that Trump would not end up winning, especially
yep.
if he's close. I mean,
yep.
the fact is, Trump has, begun to get endorsements from some establishment figures, not a lot, but he has started to get those endorsements. And I also know that there are people in the party who think that robbing the clear front runner of the nomination in a contested convention would actually do more long-term damage to the party than just letting a candidate win that they think will lose the general election.
I mean, you may be right.
Those are part of the conversation, too.
Yeah, you may be right, but I'm reading here people saying, well, maybe, but once you get into a fight for delegates, then you get into established party players who are likely to be those delegates, and those are more easily wired by sitting politicians or those who have been longer than Donald Trump. I don't know. Stan in Southwick, Massachusetts. Stan, you're on the air.
Yes, Tom. Hi, how are you today?
Okay, what do you think, Stan?
I'm a Donald Trump supporter. The one point I think, and the previous caller made it somewhat, is I think in regards to Donald Trump, the political establishment's scared to death of losing their hold on the Republican Party. And I think it makes me sick, and a lot of people out there, all the politicians, they want to get elected, they get elected, all they care about is themselves, their jobs. When they retire, what outside group will hire me and pay me a, you know, six-figure salary? We're just sick of it. And what they're doing to Donald Trump just isn't right. You know, they care about themselves. Donald Trump now is an outsider, and all of a sudden, everybody's putting so much pressure on him. You know, Stuart there was talking about can't be Hillary. I mean, who was he supporting? Romney. That's true.
I mean? That's true. He did support Romney, and clearly we know what happened in that case. Stan, I appreciate that. One more, and we'll get to Julian Zelizer in a little historical perspective here. Kelly in Hanover, New Hampshire. Kelly, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I believe a contested convention would be the best way to get Trump out of the race. He's a demagogue. He's a fearmonger. He's threatening our American democracy that was built for 240 years. Just look at the way he treats the press. Just at his last press conference, his campaign manager shoved a reporter down for asking a question about equality and women being hired at the workplace. So I just think America needs to wake up, because it's going to be too late.
But what does it mean, Kelly? Does it mean you're a Democrat who would rather see Hillary or Bernie Sanders in there?
I'm an independent that voted for Jeb Bush, and now he's out of the race. Perhaps Governor Kasich would be great.
Huh. Interesting. It sounds like we lost Kelly, but we got the point there. She's a Bush and Kasich supporter, and even she says maybe a contested convention is the way to go. Trump people, very different mind here. McKay Coppin, standby in Miami. Julian Zelizer joins us right now from New York, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, author of The Fierce Urgency of Now. Julian Zelizer, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
So in the sweep of American history, it's been a long time, 1948, since it's gone to that first ballot and beyond at a convention. Does that mean that we have or should have left this kind of contested convention in the rearview mirror, or is this still a legitimate and appropriate and proper way to duke it out?
Look, it's totally legitimate. It's within the party rules. The Democrats had their last one in 52, Republicans in 48. The problem is, you know, everyone keeps talking about the establishment or the party leaders. They don't exist anymore. You know, back in the 1940s and 50s, there were very strong machines that at these brokered conventions could actually move delegates, move votes. I don't know if that would happen right now. So it's totally within the parameters of how we nominate. But I think it would be a much messier process than many people imagine.
Give us an example, 1948 with Thomas Dewey. What happened, Julian?
Well, basically, you had state delegations negotiating, and, you know, people would throw their support behind one candidate or the other. Robert Taft was a conservative from Ohio. He was challenging Dewey. But Dewey makes deals with different delegations and the bosses in those states to give them their support. And that's the kind of wheeling and dealing, the smoke-filled rooms that we always hear about through which this worked.
McKay, On Point's been to a lot of these conventions. We will be there in Cleveland. It is hard to picture. You know, you've got big, big arenas. You've got thousands of people. Everybody's seen it on television where the states have their signs up on poles and all that. It's hard to imagine that it wouldn't be brokered somehow at that point, that you wouldn't have bosses or whips going around and mustering forces. Would it really just be the sort of chaos of the crowd, people deciding on their own hook who they're going to go for in the moment?
Well, this is the thing that makes this so interesting. Nobody has actually lived through a brokered convention or a contested convention, mm-hmm. who's currently working in politics or journalism right now. So a lot of this is speculation, and we can look back to history. We are used to conventions being highly choreographed affairs, right?
Yes.
The fact is...
Almost ridiculously so. Like, why are we here?
Right, exactly. Exactly. The fact is, though, in 1976, when it, you know, this wasn't a full-on contested convention, but it came close, it was hashed out before the first ballot, you had people, there were violent outbreaks. There were, in fact, some people report seeing Ford's sons, President Ford's sons, dump garbage on Reagan rabble rousers.
Oh, nice.
On the convention floor. So you know, this could get very, very chaotic. One point I will make quickly is that while who knows how exactly it would be brokered, the opportunity for the establishment actually to do some brokering comes actually a few days before the convention.
How so?
When the rules committee convenes, and they can tinker with a lot of the temporary rules that would make it easier for a non-Trump candidate to win the nomination. And I think that's where you'll actually see a lot of the action behind the scenes taking place.
That is interesting. Julian Zelizer, you've got the perspective of history here. I mean, first, can you really imagine that with a lot of people stuffed in this big hall, and if it's contested, and now it passed the first ballot, a lot of people are free, they can vote wherever they like, don't you think some kind of bosses will emerge in there? Or if it's rules, where would you look for the most likely tinkering?
Well, first of all, no, I can't imagine bosses stepping in. We've been hearing that since Donald Trump stepped into this race. And I think Jeb Bush's fate has given us an indication of the
good luck with that.
Of the party. And I think at this point we have to accept that. Absolutely true. The rules debates are going to be very crucial. They just did some rules changes in 2012. And I think there might, you know, be adjustments in terms of rules regarding how many states a candidate has to win a majority to be a nominee. And obviously rules governing the superdelegates. In the Republican Party, the superdelegates don't have a lot of power, and they're now bound to vote for who won the majority of the state. I could imagine there being an effort to change that. But rules fights can also be really brutal. Democrats learned that in 1968, and if there is no one to impose order on that, it could be the same kind of chaos that we could see with the nominee, especially with Trump supporters in the room.
I mean, McKay, can you really picture that a few days before the convention, they go in, they look at the profile of Trump's support, where he's won, where he hasn't, what he's got, and then they tailor make new rules so that what he has does not deliver him the convention? Is that, can they really get away with that?
I don't think they could get that far, but we've already seen indications that they're going to tinker with the rules to make it harder for Trump. I mean, look, this week we saw Ben Ginsburg, who's a longtime Republican Party elder and kind of super lawyer, come out and say outright that one of the major rules that Julian just alluded to that would prevent Trump's challengers from beating him at the convention, it's a rule that requires a candidate to win 8 states to be able to be considered for the nomination. He came out and said, well, that's a temporary rule that can be changed. So that is...
You mean they could bump it up and make it 20 states or 40 states?
Yeah, or they could make it... one state, right?
Okay. Oh, my gosh.
The fact is that they're going to try, they're going to do all in their power to make it easier for a non-Trump candidate to beat him, but they can't just single-handedly, they can't come in and just fix the election or the nomination for somebody else.
Jamie in Austin, Texas. You're on the air, Jamie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Always been a straight Republican ticket person, and so disgusted with the party, so disgusted with the candidates, can hardly believe in an educated world that this is what we have to choose from. And actually, for the first time ever, and thinking a Democratic election would be a better choice than the current people available for me to choose from on the Republican side.
Straight line Republican voter, ready to throw it all over this year. We are really in some kind of territory. I appreciate your call from Austin, Jamie. One more. Carter Lake, Iowa. TJ, you're on, TJ.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
But don't you think that a contested Republican convention will be so devastating to the Republicans that the Democrats will just take the nomination and the Republicans need to do everything they possibly can to avoid it?
McKay, what do you say?
Well, I think a lot of Republicans say that a Trump nomination would be so devastating to the party that it's worth risking it. You heard Mitt Romney say that on your air. But that is a true concern. I mean, if there is one single event that could cause the permanent fracturing of the Republican Party, it may be a contested convention that robs Donald Trump of the nomination. I think you would see a lot of Republican voters who are hardcore Trump supporters, leave the party, protest the party, boycott the convention. You could see Trump run as a third-party candidate. And frankly, you might see a third-party candidate run anyway, a more mainstream Republican candidate run as a third party. But yes, there is definitely a case to be made that a contested convention would be devastating for the party. But I think at this point, a lot of party elders believe that they're stuck with two terrible choices and they just have to pick one.
Julian Zelizer, when you look at history in the past, when things were brokered in truly smoke-filled rooms by truly a handful of people, did that lead to Americans throwing up their hands and saying, I'm sick of this, or starting new parties? Or did they just accept it? Did they not know? Are voters different today? No, are we in a new phase of history?
They are. I mean, for over a century, people accepted that was the process. That was how parties worked. But it does cause a revolt. In 1968, the Democrats have chaos, and the selection of Hubert Humphrey angers many Democrats. And that's when we reform the way we nominate our candidates, and Republicans will follow. And we entered an era where many Americans said, look, we don't want party bosses deciding who the nominee is. It was a kind of democratizing idea, and I think it's still very much part of the fabric of the country. So it's hard to imagine going back to some, selection process by elites of who should be the candidate.
So how would you advise Republican mugwumps, to the extent that they're still out there, avoid it at all costs, or we've done it before, we can do it again?
Well, look, if they can't avoid it, they can't avoid it. But I think right now to strategize for a brokered convention, which is what Mitt Romney is essentially telling voters to do, doesn't seem to me in this atmosphere like the best idea. I think right now the focus should be on getting those delegates to one of the candidates.
But we may get that contested convention anyway. Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. It is always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us today, Julian.
Thank you. Thanks.
And McKay Coppins in Miami, Florida, where all the action goes next week. Senior political writer for BuzzFeed News, right in the thick of everything Republican. McKay, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm on Twitter at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. Get that podcast in your mobile phone. When you can't get to the signal, it'll always be there for you. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.